Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
You see, when we come to understand the connection between creation and Christ, between Genesis and the New Testament, I think it's going to give us a better idea of what's going on in our culture in regard to the issues of creation and evolution. You see, this isn't merely a cultural war. This is a spiritual battle.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on John chapter 1, verses 3 through 5, in a message titled, Jesus and Creation. Now here's Pastor Brian.
John chapter 1, let me read to you verses 1 through 5. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through Him, and without Him nothing was made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. John is, as we pointed out previously, intentionally drawing a parallel with Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, of course, reads, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." And so here in the opening of John's gospel, we are told that the Word, Jesus Christ, is the one through whom the heavens and the earth were created. This is intentional. John, of course, is being led by the Spirit, and he goes straight from his statement about the relation between the Word and God to the phenomenon of creation. The self-communication of God occurs first in creation and then ultimately in the incarnation. That is why creation and salvation are very closely connected in the New Testament. You see, both of them have to do with God's self-communication. The Apostle Paul made that same connection so beautifully when he said, "For it is the God who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, who has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." You know that there is a huge battle raging all around us over this issue of creation. And sometimes Christians foolishly say things like, "Oh, well, you know, that's not that big of a deal. I mean, hey, Genesis, you know, it was a long time ago. And what does that matter? We just need to concentrate on Jesus." No, that's foolish. You cannot disconnect Jesus from creation. He's the creator. And the New Testament never disconnects it. The New Testament connects that over and over and over and over again. Listen to what Paul said in writing to the Colossians concerning Jesus Christ. "He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all of creation. For by him all things were created that are in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through him and for him." Listen to what we're told in Hebrews chapter 1. "God, who at various times and in different ways spoke in time past to the fathers by the prophets, has in these last days spoken to us in his Son, whom he has appointed the heir of all things, through whom also he made," or created, "the worlds." You see, when we come to understand the connection between creation and Christ, between Genesis and the New Testament, I think it's going to give us a better idea of what's going on in our culture in regard to the issues of creation and evolution. You see, this isn't merely a cultural war. This is a spiritual battle, and it's just another manifestation of man's hostility, his innate hostility toward God. Did you know that the United States Supreme Court has declared it unconstitutional to teach young earth creationism as fact in a public school classroom? Can you imagine that? The U.S. Supreme Court says it's a violation of the Constitution to teach young earth creationism. And of course, it constantly is coming down in support of the teaching of evolution. In Britain, a friend of mine was told by an Anglican clergyman that he did not know of one single Anglican minister that believed in a literal interpretation of the Genesis account of creation. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't any Anglican clergymen that believe that. I'm just saying that this man, who is an Anglican clergyman, said he didn't know of anybody. So it would just show you how few and far between they are. The Roman Catholic Church has come out with statements to the effect that the faithful should not believe the accounts in Genesis of creation as literal, but should understand them as more poetic, and should stay away from the fundamentalist idea that there was a literal creation, a six-day creation, and encouraging more an embracing of evolutionary ideas and so forth. Now, ironically, with all of that going on, all of the propaganda promoting evolutionism and the many, many attempts to discredit creationism, ironically, a recent CBS poll here in the U.S. found that 51% of those surveyed believe that God created man in his present form, and another 30% say that God used some sort of evolutionary process. So 81% of people polled indicated that they believed that God had some involvement in creation. In Britain, a recent BBC poll found that half the British population believe that God is responsible for life. Half the British population. Now, the pollsters were astounded. The people there in positions of power in the academic world, everybody was stunned by this poll because, of course, Britain has been, in many ways, sort of the epicenter of the whole evolutionary movement. Of course, Darwin came from England himself. And so there's a big uproar now amongst the scientific community because the BBC poll discovered half the population still believes that God is responsible for life. Now, I'll bet that that sent Oxford professor Richard Dawkins through the roof. You see, he thought that it was only dumb Americans that still believed in creation or in God. Now, Dawkins is so sure that evolution happened that he says it is blasphemy to think or to say otherwise. That's how confident he is that evolution is not a theory, but is actually a fact. So, what do we say about this whole idea of evolution? I mean, clearly, as we have read here in our text tonight, John, in no uncertain terms, states that Jesus created all things. By him, or through him, all things were created, and without him, not a single thing that was made was made. That's literally what John said. So what do we make of this idea of evolution? Well, quite honestly, it is a theory contradicted by the evidence. In 150 years, 155 years or so, they have not been able to come up with any concrete, substantial, verifiable, empirical evidence for evolution. But there is this unbelievable insistence coming from much of the scientific community that evolution had to have occurred. And it's amazing, if you read the literature, it's amazing how these guys will just, you know, invent things that no one has ever seen. It has never been duplicated in a laboratory. Couldn't possibly take place, but they will come up with this stuff and say, you know, this is how it happened. But truly, evolution is a theory contradicted by the evidence. Many years ago, they stated that within the fossil record, we would find proof for evolution. You see, of course, they're looking for what was popularly called the missing link, or a transitional form is a more technical term. You see, the idea behind evolution is that lower life forms, through a process of time, evolved into more complex and higher life forms. And so they theorized many years ago that the more we dig into the fossil record, we will find these transitional forms. We will find these forms that are in this process of transition. But the reality is, they've never found a single transitional form, not even one. Now, if this occurred like they confidently assert that it had, you would not only find one or two or five or 15 transitional forms, the fossil record would be full of them, but there's nothing there, nothing at all. So observation and the fossil record support the biblical account of reproduction after kinds. If you go back to Genesis chapter 1, 10 times in Genesis chapter 1, it states that what God created reproduced itself according to its kind. 10 times God says it there. That's exactly what has been observed all throughout history, and that is exactly what you see in the fossil record. Everything reproduces after its kind. There's no blending. There's no mixture of kinds. Now, even to this day, evolutionists will still insist that evolution is taking place. They will go back to some of the arguments of Darwin and people after him. Every time I read an article on this subject, they will make reference to these finches, these little birds in the Galapagos Islands. And they'll talk about the finch beaks and how some beaks are longer, some are shorter, some are softer, some are harder. And they'll say, you see right here, this is evolution in process. We can see it. When the finch becomes a golden retriever, then we will have to concede that evolution is a reality. But until then, as long as it remains a finch, hard beak, soft beak, long beak, short beak, it's still a finch. It doesn't matter. You see, the Bible teaches that God created kinds, and within the kind there would be a tremendous amount of variation. That's what we see. But one kind doesn't become another kind. Never has happened. Never will happen. It is a figment of the imagination of these men who are committed to this theory that completely lacks scientific evidence. I subscribe to this magazine called Natural History, and I don't know why I do that. I just, it's kind of torturous to read through it. But a few issues back, the entire issue was edited by Richard Dawkins. The entire issue was dedicated to proving that evolution is a fact, not a theory, and doing everything possible to try to discredit creationism or to try to discredit the intelligent design movement. And as you read through the various articles, basically you find just a regurgitation of the same things they've been saying over and over and over again with absolutely no evidence to support it. And then in regard to the creationist especially, but also the intelligent design people, there's just a bunch of slander and a bunch of name calling because there's nothing else they can really do. So that is the reality. Observation and the fossil record support the biblical account of reproduction after Cain. Another area where we see the crisis in the evolutionary world is in regard to the ape men. Now, we've all probably heard of or remember hearing about maybe when we were in school or some of you are in school now and perhaps you've seen the charts or heard all about the various different ape men, hominids, the Nebraska man or the Java man or the Peking man or the Piltdown man or all of the different names that they give to these supposed creatures that were evolving from lower life forms, from apes into men. Did you know that in the scientific community there is so much confusion and conflict and argumentation among them? Did you know that there are some scientists who actually believe that apes evolved from humans rather than humans evolving from apes? That's how disoriented they are in their perspective. You see, this isn't a unified school of thought. There's so much division within it. But they do unify over one thing. They are all adamantly against the biblical account of creation. And so that's where they find unity with one another. But when you look at these ape men, did you know that every one of them have been proven either to have been a hoax intentionally perpetrated upon people, as was Nebraska Man and Piltdown Man, both intentionally fraudulent, and the rest of them have been proven to be nothing more than either human skeletal parts or ape skeletal parts. And generally it's apes, the only ones probably being Neanderthal man. They've come to the conclusion that Neanderthal man was actually really man with probably a severe case of arthritis. But, you know, this stuff is taught still today. It's been totally discredited. But it doesn't stop our public school systems from still teaching it. It is astounding. There's another thing that's come a little more recently that radically contradicts the theory, and that is the idea of irreducible complexity within the cells. Now, there are two movements that are opposing evolutionary theory. There's the creationist movement, and then there's what's called the intelligent design movement. Now, the intelligent design people generally want to disassociate themselves to some degree away from the creationist because creationism has that stigma of believing in a young earth, thousands of years rather than millions of years, and a literal six-day creation as is recorded in Genesis. And as we've already seen, the U.S. Supreme Court has come out and stated that it's unconstitutional to teach that in the classroom. So the intelligent design people are seeking to sort of disassociate themselves from the creationist simply because they realize we're not going to get anywhere if we're being identified with that. So they have taken a bit of a different approach, and they've sought to show that there is too great a complexity within nature for it to have occurred accidentally, which is, of course, what Darwinism teaches, that it all happened randomly. Now, within the intelligent design movement, one of the arguments that they've put forth is this irreducible complexity of the cell. Now, if you read, like I read about five different articles today, if you read articles reporting the different battles that are going on in places over this particular topic, they will generally refer to the intelligent design people as putting forth an argument that says, you know, things are too intricately designed to have evolved, therefore there must be a designer. That's only part of the argument. And there's a lot to that part of it, but there's another part to it that makes it really, I think, irrefutable. And it's the irreducible complexity of the cell. You see, it's not only that a cell is so complex that it must have been designed, but the cell is irreducibly complex, meaning that if you took any part of the cell away, the cell itself could not exist. Now, you see, the whole idea behind evolution is that things develop over a long period of time. It's called gradualism. And gradually things came together. But irreducible complexity shows that you cannot have the gradual development of a cell. It has to come together in its entirety or it can't exist at all. And Michael Behe, in his book Darwin's Black Box, he entitled the book Darwin's Black Box to point out that back in Darwin's day, he did not know about the complexity of the cell. He thought the cell was rather simple. And thinking the cell was rather simple, he thought it probably wasn't all that big of a deal for the evolutionary process to take place. But what biochemists have come to understand is that the complexity is, it's just unimaginable. And so because of the irreducible complexity, evolution is not a possibility. Mathematically speaking, evolution is an impossibility, mathematically. I heard somebody give an example the other day that I thought was quite astounding. And this was the example. The probability that evolution could have occurred randomly, or life could have spontaneously generated from nothing, is the same as if you could take the entire universe, not just our galaxy, not just all of the planets, you know, not just our solar system, not just the stars, not just our galaxy, but if you could take the entire universe, all of the many galaxies, if you could take it all and reduce it down to its molecular base, in other words, if you could reduce it all to atoms, you'd have quite a few atoms, to say the least.
Let's take a quick break and listen to what Pastor Brian and his wife Cheryl are saying about this month's resource on Back to Basics.
Cheryl, for this month's offer, we have a great book that's called The Story of Grace, Beyond the Iron Curtain. And this is written by a friend of ours, Phil Metzger, and it kind of chronicles the story of how the Lord actually led us to go behind the Iron Curtain many years ago and to begin to preach the gospel and plant churches.
I love this because Phil not only includes the stories, but he has these great little lessons of faith in every chapter. Yeah. There is just so much, and it's so rich. I love Phil's style of writing too, because it pops. Yeah. It just pops with excitement and it's bursting with personality and passion.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story with a lot of personal detail and a lot of amazing personal testimonies.
Thanks, Pastor Brian and Cheryl, for sharing about this month's resource. You can order the book titled A Story of Grace Beyond the Iron Curtain by Phil Metzger by going to our website, backtobasicsradio.com. Scroll down until you see the photo of the book, A Story of Grace, and then click the donate button. When you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book by Phil Metzger, journaling a story of hope in the midst of hardship, a story of mercy in the darkest hour, culminating into a story of God's amazing grace. It's our way of saying thank you for your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.